This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
You're being infiltrated. Radio B.
Okay, here we go. We are coming to you live from Energy Safety Canada 2024. And yes, you're not going to believe it. We finally have Matthew Holloway here. How are you?
I'm good, Jay. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. If I can get you a little bit closer to that microphone, that'd be fantastic. Just pull it your direction. We're
there
good.
There we go.
So you just came off the stage. I mean, you just legitimately came off the stage. No joke. I always like to ask with this conversation. I start off with this question because it's the dumbest question to ask anyone. What did you not get to cover that you wanted to cover?
Oh, in an hour to talk about. I was reminiscing with a colleague about how that presentation was probably six different projects and 10 years all wrapped up into one. So there's a whole lot. I could probably go on and on for hours and hours on that topic of safety measurement. So I put the highlights in there, but, you know, the devil's in the details.
Okay, so let's go through it, because there's going to be, of course, some listeners that were not here.
Sure.
So we want to cover some of it. So give some highlights.
Okay.
And then we'll go into...
No lowlights?
Well, you can give some of the lowlights, too, but because you were presenting, I'm sure there was no lowlights whatsoever.
Sure. So some highlights. You know, I asked the audience to start how many people were satisfied with the way we measure safety. And they were roughly 1,000 people in the audience, and I had one hand. So I need to find that person who raised their hand, but virtually everybody's unsatisfied or dissatisfied with the way we measure safety. So the presentation really had two main parts, dismantling the way we have been measuring safety, which is recordable injury rate, and proposing and sharing some of the work we've been doing in the Research Alliance about some solutions. So I really tried to carry the arc through the, you know, articulating the problem and then sharing some of the good work that the teams have been doing on developing some solutions.
So when you're looking at the solutions that you're developing inside of the lab, what are you coming up with? What are you seeing? What's working? What's not working? Of course, we all start off with models and then go, okay, this is not working. Let's change the model up a little bit.
Yeah. So, you know, the research teams get together, and a lot of the research team focuses on testing the boundaries of things and stretching things and finding out, you know, when does something work and when does it not work. So I actually have what I think is an interesting example of something that doesn't work. So I'll share a failure first.
Best way to start, right?
Yeah, exactly. So leading indicators has been the buzz for a long time. It was what I, you know, after I finished my PhD, that was one of my first projects, was working on leading indicators. And, you know, we for a long time, we thought of it as don't do lagging, do leading. It was an or, not an and statement. And one of the things that I've learned over the, you know, my career is that, you know, if we don't have standard leading indicators, if they apply only within our company, then they don't have much chance for success at the higher levels of the organization, say the C-suite or a board, where metrics really matter, because those metrics don't mean anything to their investors and to their competitors and so forth. And they have to look after those relationships and that benchmarking. So we tried to do some standard leading indicators in a highly regulated industry, the U.S. electric utility industry. And we started with safety observations, and we weren't successful. We tried to find, you know, it's a heavily regulated industry, a follow the leader. You know, everybody's trying to do things generally the same way. And their record-keeping systems, definitions of what is and what isn't an observation were so radically different that we didn't find an apples-to-apples comparison. So the project, you know, I wouldn't call it a failure, but we failed in that goal of having something standard that we could benchmark instead of, say, recordable injury rate. So, you know, that really spurred the later research topics and the new kind of more innovative things that we were doing. But we realized we had to do new things if we were going to standardize. We couldn't try to standardize the old. There's too much baggage.
So you did use the word standardize in trying to move forward with this, and you did say observation and not audit. Now, I'm a big... I love to hear words. Why observations and not audits? Because I'll go to behavior-based safety for a moment, and it's audits. It's not observations. Why that terminology?
Well, frankly, I was trying to use the terminology that everybody else uses.
Okay.
So words do matter. Mm-hmm. And you know, audits... People use the terms observation, audit, inspection interchangeably and casually.
Correct.
So I don't have any particular personal definition of what is and what isn't an observation, because even to me, it sounds like a better word, observation. But then somebody says, well, if you're observing, are you engaging? Like, so then we call them engagements. Are they engagements?
Now they're just smartasses. That's all it is. It's a smartass comment.
Exactly. So, well, no, I think it's a great words. Most of what we actually work on in the Research Alliance is definitions. It's something that we're missing in safety quite a bit. We use terms like near miss. We use words like serious injury. But we don't use those words consistently. And so words, I agree, do matter. But I have no real good answer for why I said observations beyond that was where we settled in the middle.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you're starting to do these, trying to evolve this and get it into a standard and you notice that, hey, this is not working out, when you go back to the lab and go, okay, we're going back to the drawing board, what are you thinking now? What are you trying to change this into?
Yeah, so with leading indicators, we tried to articulate what the real problem was. One was that we were doing things so differently that, you know, a leading indicator for our observations, for example, might work. But across organizations, it didn't. So that was one challenge, is what can we create that's something that we can use together and create a set of rules and follow them, and that's easier said than done. The other with leading indicators is almost always they're quantitative. How many observations am I doing? How many engagements? How many corrective actions am I closing on time? And one of the first research teams we had in the Research Alliance studied quality. So how good are my pre-job briefs, for example? How good are my observations? How good are my leadership engagements? And you can measure quality. Some people don't like that idea of measuring quality, but you can if you follow a rubric. I do that as a professor all the time. I get a paper, I have to read it, I have to judge it, and it's a qualitative judgment. Mm-hmm. And I end up having to assign a letter score or a number to that. We've done that as humans for a really long time. So we got into measuring quality and trying to create something standard. That was our kind of reaction to the failure, was we got to get outside the normal box. The normal box is not going to work.
So when you go through the process and you realize, okay, the normal box is not working, and go ahead, Derek, I'll go along. So when you're going through the whole process and then you realize, okay, the normal box is not working, we're going to change the way that the industry is looking at leading indicators, looking at lagging indicators. We'll throw both interchangeably inside of there at the same time too, just for the sake of doing it. So when you're going through this and you go, okay, we're going to go back through, go to the lab, how do you go and say, okay, what do we have to sample rate? What's the sample rate that you're going through that you go, boom, this is it?
So when you're talking about sample rate, you mean how many observations do I need? How many judgments of quality?
Correct.
Yeah, that's an awesome question because, you know, we're used to, in safety, I think people are accustomed to measuring everything, meaning I want all my safety data, I want all my near-miss reports, I want all of my records of observations and everything. We tend to think about measuring safety as a whole. But in other aspects of the business, take quality control. We sample. You're not going to measure every bit of concrete that's coming out of the hose, right? You're going to measure some. You're going to do a slump test. You're going to figure out where, you know, or are we within control? So we have to start getting comfortable with sampling and this idea of control, and that we're not going to see, the quality of every pre-job, but how many do I need to have an understanding of, you know, what's representative of the whole? So there's two parts to it. One is, how do you sample well so it's a distributed sample and things are represented, you know, it's a representative sample. The other is how much. And my academic answer, as it always is it depends. So bigger companies with more hours and more observations have to do, you know, more of these judgments. But there's a way to compute it. And it's a very simple statistical formula. We say, well, this is how many, for example, pre-jobs we have. And to get a representative sample, I need at least this many. And it's not a percentage, so you can't just carry a percentage. You have to actually do the math. But the math's not so terribly difficult that you can't do it on a napkin.
Well, of course, I want to ask the question because we have different size organizations that actually listen to us. So I always go, is it a percentage? Is it a number? Because, of course, if you're in a small organization, you have 10 people working, you go, okay, I need 1,000 of them. They're going to look at you like you're off your rocker. But if you're in an organization that has thousands and thousands of people, they're going to be like, okay, we'll get that done in a week.
Yeah, and sampling is not directly proportional. So if you're a small organization, you might have to do a higher percentage, but fewer of these quality judgments than, say, a larger organization who would have to do more, but a smaller percentage of their total. So it's kind of sampling is an interesting, you know, beast. But, you know, larger companies can get away with a smaller percentage, but they still need a higher number.
Okay. Yeah. So let me ask an oddball question, just totally out of left field, has nothing to do with what we're talking about. How are you enjoying doing the best of both worlds? Because you're in academia, you're also going around, and I've seen you in different places, being able to do presentations, being able to talk about this, and you're able to go back to the lab and listen to, you know, this is what the people are saying, this is what I'm bringing back.
Yeah, you know, when we first met, we were saying years ago, right? Mm-hmm. We coincidentally were in the same remote location. You know, back in those days, these types of engagements were absolutely essential to keeping, like, helping me stay relevant. So as an academic, you oftentimes, especially when you're younger and new and establishing yourself and nobody really cares who you are, you're reaching out to try to, you know, make your mark and make a difference, and you don't really know, you might not know enough about the industry to know kind of where, you know, where things are needed. And so these engagements were essential at that stage. They're still very good engagements. But now the way we do our research is entirely different. So I made my way through the academic system. I don't have to worry about tenure and promotion or anything like that anymore. And so that's where we started the Construction Safety Research Alliance. Now we do research directly with industry. 100 companies. We have over 300 people doing active research projects with us. So we have, you know, on a two-week period, which just ended, you know, last week, we'll bring 30 people in each day to study a topic together with the academic researchers, the industry professionals. We argue, we debate, we create definitions. So nowadays, that's where I get my relevance, is listening to them and their ideas and working directly with them instead of doing my own research in my hole in the office and or in the ivory tower and then trying to profess to the group later. But now I give a presentation, and it's a we statement, not a me statement, if you know what I mean. I just talk about what the team's been working on.
So when you get to see this, you're almost really living the black line, blue line, as they like to use out there, worker manager versus actual work being done. So you're looking at it. So how do those discussions happen inside of the lab? Because if you're bringing in an outsider and you have academics and you have outsiders, the people from academia are going to say, well, this is how I imagine it should be done. The other people are going to be like, this is how we're doing it. How do those conversations go? Give us the behind baseball.
Well, you know, sometimes we organize very specific processes, and the intention of those processes is to have people have their minds changed. So if you've ever heard of, like, the Delphi process, right? You make your judgment. We have discussions. We try to make, you know, different judgments relative to, you know, understanding other people's perspectives, et cetera. Like, the whole goal of that process is to change your mind. So I think my biggest kind of black line, blue line is I'll go into these projects thinking that a definition is going to be easy, and it's so hard, right? Mm-hmm. So take the definition of, you know, what's a change? You know, we have a project that's studying change. We have to define what a last-minute change even is. So take our project on, you know, what's different about serious injuries versus less serious injuries. Well, you have to have a definition of serious. And that's an intense discussion, right? So to give you an example, you know, I had an idea of what I thought it might be based on some of the literature, and then we get into the gray area and the details, and we had like a knockdown, drag-out fight about whether or not cutting the tip of your finger off was serious or not. And there's no right answer or wrong answer. That's the magic. It's just what we can agree on, right? That's what definitions are all about. So I think that's my biggest kind of... I go into these things and naively every time think, oh, I think we got this figured out. And then we get into the first two meetings, and it just highlights how we really don't have
this. So no one looked at you and said, it's accidental dismemberment? I mean, you would think a tip of a finger, it's still something.
You know, so here's what's fascinating to me about the whole idea of serious. And I had a neighbor that lived up the street from me, and she's ER nurse. Okay, and that's her trade. And she said, you know, you have to think not as somebody going into the ER, right? You're not the patient. Instead, you are the ER nurse, right? So everybody going in, whether you get an earache or, you know, you cut a finger off, everything's serious to the person who's sitting in the waiting room. But the ER nurse has to make a decision of what's really serious. And they're pretty irreverent. They're going to be like, you're going to sit down, and I'm going to take this person who needs more help, right? And so... not everything can be serious, because if we put everything in the bucket, we overclassify and put everything as serious, then nothing's serious, and we're not focusing our attention in what matters the most. So it was a really, really tricky project. Mm-hmm. And some are obvious, you know, life-ending, life-threatening stuff, but the life-altering, there's a line. And we had medical doctors actually advise later on about where that line should be, and we as safety people oftentimes don't know enough to know where the line is.
So where's the line?
Well, here's what's cool. So the model that the team ended up creating, they called it the life model because it's life-ending, which is obvious. You have life-threatening, which they said is when an injury is bad enough where you would not survive if you didn't have immediate medical attention, right? So you had to have CPR, a defib, you had to have somebody, you know, closing a wound. You get the idea. If they didn't have immediate attention, they would have passed away. The difficult one is life-altering, because it depends. And so that's where we got into all the details. And I couldn't answer your question of like, well, what's the definition of that? Because it's really like the basic idea is you'll never be the same again. You'll permanently lose function of something that affects your everyday life. And the medical doctors put specific examples. So if you break your finger, it's not serious. It sucks, but it's not serious. You cut the end of your finger off, it sucks, but it's not serious. As controversial as that may be, according to this model. Other people might carry a different definition, and that's fine. But if you're following that definition, it wouldn't be.
Okay. Yeah. So here's another one, and I'm going to try to cut this short because I know you just came off the stage. So adrenaline's going up. It's coming down, so I won't keep it too long. What do we need to be looking at next? What do you see coming down the pike?
You know, so I love that question because I don't do much of that visioning exercise. Mm-hmm. So when we do a new project, what we do is we do a call to the entire membership to understand what's important to the people doing the work.
Okay.
So I don't presume to know what, you know, I have things I think are important, but I'm more interested in what people who do work are interested in, what their challenges are, more importantly from a research side, what are their questions? What question do they need to answer to do things better? And I'll give you an example. We have a project just kicked off. We had meeting number two last week. And it's on how do we get better at recognizing last minute change? Because there's a lot of serious injuries and fatalities that happen when something's changed in the environment. And regardless of what position you have about human error and other things, people need to be able to see things that change in their environment, right? Work as it's the black line, blue line. You need to be able to find the gaps as a person, and the technology is not always going to do it for you. And even if you have the best controls, things are going to change. And so I think what's fascinating about that topic is we don't know, even in the heavy psychology literature, about what affects people's ability to recognize a change, what changes we see and which we miss, why, and how to get better. And so this is our project for the next couple of years. I'm excited about it, but it came from the industry, right? And it's something they were like, we just can't say plan for change and stop work when something changes. We need more than that. And that was the inspiration for the team. And now we got 2 years with 35 people going full steam on it.
Very cool. So what question's important to you? You said you brought that up, so you left that one open for me.
Yeah, what question is important to me? I think my biggest personal question out there is which interventions, which things that we do in the name of safety really are the most impactful? And I ask that question because I am at heart an experimentalist. I'm an engineer by training. I'm not a psychologist or a sociologist. Oh, okay. So, you know,
this makes it even more interesting.
Yeah. so why I'm an experimentalist is, you know, we can say, hey, I did this thing and things got better, but you don't know it's because of that intervention or the million other things you're doing. So there are ways from pharmaceutical research and others to isolate and attribute the impact of a thing you do to keep people safe. And we've tested it out. We've tried it on a few things. It works. And, you know, it's a departure from pilot testing or micro experimenting and some of these other terms. It's proper hardcore experimentation that you can only achieve if you have resources and collaboration. And we can do it. And I think we should. And so that's a big passion area for me is, look, we need to look at impact and return that we're making on these investments if we want to be an integrated business function. And there are ways to do it if we get clever, but it's a lot of hard work. So that's what fascinates me the most. It's because it keeps me in business, isn't it?
So is that your next book? Or is that going to be the book as well?
That's funny. I have not written a book. Right. And so I think that's something that I aspire to do at some point. I write journal papers. I'm an academic. That's where my heart's at. Peer-reviewed science. And I know not as many people read it, and I don't have funny stories in there or anything cool. But I'm an engineer, and I'm a professor, and I'm nerdy, and that's what I publish. So maybe someday that'll be the topic.
It's always an important subject. And then last but not least, what do you think about this venue? I mean, we are out in the middle of beauty. At least that's the way I keep on looking at it. This is my second year in a row doing this, and I'm just amazed on this venue.
Yeah, Banff as a whole is a wonderful place. And if you've never been to Banff, you should go to Banff.
Go right now.
My wife and I did our honeymoon here, actually. Mm-hmm. Went hiking and mountain biking and everything. It's a wonderful place. And then the venue, the Fairmont's a good spot. So I don't know. I rolled in, you know, on Sunday night. And I was like, oh, this is pretty sweet. Right?
And then it started snowing. But you're from Colorado, so that's nothing to you.
No, but I was done with the snow, right? And then I have to – I always think of us as the same weather pattern but a month ahead. And it was like taking a step back, which I'm a little grumbly about. But you know what? It's beautiful. company's good. I can't complain. I got wine in my hands. I'm doing all right.
So if people want to find out more about you, the work that you're doing, where can they go?
Yeah, so every single thing that we do is made publicly available, open access. So the Construction Safety Research Alliance, you look that up. There's a knowledge center. Everything's there. My contact information's there. I try to be better about posting things on LinkedIn when things are produced and whatnot, and so you can follow it there. But come to the communities of practice. The safety summit's live streamed. You know, we try to do this as a public service as much as we can. So if you're interested in staying up to date on the things that's happening and coming out of that community, there are easy ways to access us and follow along. So I'd encourage folks, go to that website. You can sign up for the community of practice. You can sign up for the summit and all of that. It's all neatly there. And if you Google search, it'll take you to the right place.
Very cool, Matthew. I really do appreciate the time.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.